And I'm Karen Wright. It is 9:33. Joining me now is my good garden friend, Barb Lamson. Good morning, Barb.
Hey, Karen. Good morning to you, my good garden friend, too.
Good to see the sunshine.
Oh, it's great. As a matter of fact, the sun was pouring in through my bay windows, came all the way across the living room into the dining room, and you know what I did for the last hour? I dusted furniture.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were laying on the in the bay window sunbathing.
No, you know, when the sun rays are in there, you can really see the dust.
Oh, for sure.
And I did the whole living room before I came in.
Oh, my.
Thank you very much, David. You didn't help me, but anyway.
Hey, well, didn't you tell me he was doing something in the basement that was unexpected the other day, and you were like, oh, if I would have told him this, he probably wouldn't have done it.
And he did a great job.
What, did he clean the basement or something?
Yeah, he picked up furniture, and oh, yes, he did absolutely everything, and I'm very, very tickled, and he stays busy all the time. And, you know, when it comes to dusting these pieces of furniture that I have, some of them are... Well, I guess all of them are walnut. They're very dark, and they have grooves, you know, how furniture
gets... The carving.
Yeah, the carving on it. And you have to be very careful, you know, where you use a real fine cloth, and you get in those cracks and that. And I don't mind doing that a bit, but I don't expect other people to do it for me.
Well, he lives in the house, too, so...
Well, after all, David would say, after all, you're the one who picked out the furniture.
Oh.
And you're the one that needed to have all that stuff.
Fair enough.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. And I don't mind a bit, especially when the sun is shining in like this. You know, you can see, oh, sun, the
dust. It feels so good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I've noticed a lot of dust on some of my plants. You know, I've got the clivia that's going to have another bloom again. I've got that clivia, but that thing's got those big, shiny leaves. But I looked at them, and I started to dust them, and the dust is thick on that. I couldn't believe it because I hadn't done anything all winter, and I thought, whoa, because then they can't manufacture the
photosynthesis.
Yeah, photosynthesis, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know...
So it's important to clean them.
It's the sun shining on the leaves. That's what the leaves become, the factories, and then they have the energy to convert the starches to sugars or vice versa.
And make it grow.
And they make them grow. That's right.
Guess what I got out last night? Actually, Jeff got it out of the basement for me.
Don't tell me. Something to use for growing things?
Yes, the fan. I have a little fan it's one of those that...
Oscillating,
yes. And it's not a huge one, but it's, you know, about 12, 14 inches tall.
Yep.
Because my seedlings now are starting to develop their secondary leaves. Because, you know, when they first come up, they just have that... They all kind of look similar because they're just... But once they start getting those secondary leaves, you can really tell
them.
True leaf. Mm-hmm. And they start reaching for light. Even though I've got a light right over them, it's still... Some of them... Some of them lean a little because they go toward the light. Some are farther away. And so this will help them gain a little strength. It's like why you don't leave a tree. You know, when you have a tree and you stake it, you don't want to leave that stake on more than a year, because if you do, that tree will just never get the strength it needs. It needs that movement to get a little body.
I agree.
It's like us with exercising. If you don't move, you turn into a blob. Yeah.
It's so interesting that when you're growing anything that's alive, they have the same requirements, you know, air, sunshine, water, food, and all of these different things, and you have to bear that in mind. It isn't that you can take something, plop it in the ground, and you're done. That's just the beginning.
Right, and I think sometimes that's why people think they have brown thumbs, because they say, well, I can't grow anything. Well, if you just plop it in the ground and forget it, it probably will die. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm excited every day now to see things coming up, starting to come up. That's like, oh, gosh, thank you, Lord. I thought for a while there that we weren't going to have anything because we had such an open winter. There was no snow cover. And on some things, I think I had plenty of mulch on them. Other things, I had less. And we had all that wind. And when you use these decomposed leaves on things, they blow off really fast.
That's why I found, and I wish we had more, I wish I had more access to pine trees, because in my hosta garden, it gets very windy up there by the lake. Mm-hmm. And so I went around and I begged, borrowed, and I didn't steal any, but I begged and borrowed people
sure.
to, do you have any of the pine trees? So then I would, you know, I found a bunch of different people, and then I would put them in, rake them up for them, and I put them in garbage bags, and then I put those on my hostas. That's one of the only thing that doesn't blow all over. They kind of, at least they've got some stability. So I wish I had more of them.
Yeah.
Down in Georgia, don't you say they have so many they don't know what to do with them?
They actually, on the public lands, they bale them.
They do.
They bale them and they sell them. And
probably pretty cheap, too, I bet.
I don't know, but I not purchased any, but I did have, I was surprised, a gentleman came by with a pickup one day, and he said, I'm selling pine needles.
Okay.
And I said, really? He said, yeah, I'll even spread them for you. And I said, well, you know, this isn't my house, so I can't do that. But I said, you know, if you give me your name and your phone number, I can call you back. He said, oh, that's okay. I'll stop another day.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, I should send you down with my my CRV, my little Honda, and then when you and Dave go down there, you can just fill the entire thing and come back up, because that's the thing. You can buy it, but it's the shipping that's more than the product.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't do it. But yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, is moving anything from one part of the country to the next part.
It's,
you don't know what weed seeds and things you're bringing
insects,
in with it.
All
of that. Yeah,
true.
Right. But we have really, our soil in Georgia is it's clay. We have a lot of clay.
Well, isn't that what they talk about, the red clay in Georgia?
Yeah. It's red in parts of Georgia, and then it's real tannish. It gets, and you know, oh boy, is that stuff poor. So improving the soil.
I just got a picture of Barb Lamson with Tim Scott. Isn't that you, Barb?
Oh, lovely.
And you have a whole bouquet of iris there. They just got sent on my computer.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a recent photo, Barb? It says, Happy Easter from Ms. Lona and Mr. Tim.
That's so nice. That's last spring.
You got to talk in your microphone there.
Oh, I got to get back down again.
Well, anyway, so Ms. Lona, thanks. Happy Easter to you, too.
Yeah, Lona, thank you for sending the picture. I hope there's a copy going to my house,
I'll send it to you, too.
And that, I wonder... that is a recent, I imagine last spring, summer, sometime in there.
And the picture, well, it has iris and peonies, or peonies as some people call them. And so that would have been a little later on in the spring, because those are not here yet. Those, obviously, the first thing now that's coming up are the tulips, and I've already had the crocus blooming. And
Right. You know, I was wondering for a while, you know, just what was going to be coming up, because I just didn't see anything in the perennial border that was popping through. And now we've had a little warm day. We had that rain, and I think it was the rain that was the missing ingredient. And once we got about an inch of rain, that kind of triggered things, and it's looking pretty normal. Not big enough yet, but it's coming. So I'm just hopeful that we won't have any frosts or anything. I was talking to a few of my gardening friends, and they all said, we're just going to take a wait-and-see attitude now, whether the things that are up in your garden that are either perennials, I guess they'd be perennials, if they're going to make it or not, but we're not going to worry about it. We're just going to take a, you know, what comes, comes.
Well, my tulips, you know, and my daffodils are up actually quite far. So they're maybe 6 or so inches up, and they had all that snow in front. They seem fine.
Yeah.
And they're pretty tough.
You know, I put in a different variety of daffodils. They're the smaller ones. Have you ever noticed you can buy those daffodils?
There's like the little, well, they have little mini ones that are almost.
Yeah,
like,
and they have some that are taller. They're probably 10 to 12 inches taller, mm-hmm. but they have the small blooms on them.
Yes.
So you can see them very easily, and they're really doing gangbusters.
Have you ever had the ones that you plant that are about, they go about 6 inches, and they look like little minis. They're just the cutest little things, but I had them in too much shade, I think, because they they didn't make it, but they were really...
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, either that or maybe because they were so small and the bulbs were so small, yeah, they didn't make enough food to come back. And that
you
could
know,
be too.
My crocus that I planted that were shorter, and I planted them out in the front yard. I saw them the first day when they opened up, and crocus don't really bloom very long. And with being so close at hand, I thought, I'm going to see these for, you know, 7-8 days, but I didn't.
Mine seemed to do okay. Maybe it's the variety or if it gets too cold or something.
I don't know if they came up at the wrong time or what it was, but I had them along the driveway between my neighbor and myself. So they get the wind.
Sure.
They also get some salt from both driveways. So maybe that could have been a factor. But I was surprised. I went out and the plants look healthy. It's just that the blooms lasted about one day, and that was it.
Speaking of salt, you know, we didn't have nearly as much this winter. Remember last winter when,
yeah,
we had so much snow and we had salt, salt, salt on the roads? And I don't think there was as much this year, but I know there is one thing. If you've got, like, we're right next to the road, when the plows, it gets on the probably the first few feet of the yard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it, I mean, that's the kind of thing. In the spring, when the grass starts to grow, you can get your hose out there and spray, mm-hmm, to try to get some of that salt out and let it not, so it's not so heavy on there and just
sure,
to make,
sure,
yeah. So that's,
yeah,
something.
As salt is, it's a preservative. It's always it kills things.
Well, it's bad when it goes down the drain into,
yeah,
our lakes.
That sodium, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's a good thing to watch for. And you know, we haven't had salting on our street either, but we've had the big snow plow that comes by, and he hasn't had to have his blade down, but he goes zooming by, and I thought, you know, I would much rather have a plow come and plow my
push
street.
Push it away, yeah.
Yeah, rather than, they were always doing so much of this preemptive planning, and that salt truck would, the brining, I guess they brine, yeah, and they'd brine the street. And I thought, really? You know, the forecasts are so, they're not reliable.
Inaccurate?
No.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the thing. It could be the big one, like we always say, and then in this winter, of course, it hasn't happened. Speaking of weather, did you see on the front of the Free Press today, there's a map of the drought map that shows?
I did.
And, I mean, it's better news. It's not great, but the rain and the snow we recently had have eased the drought. So instead of in the moderate to severe drought, a lot of the state has moved toward abnormally dry or just moderate. So
yeah,
we are now in the abnormally dry, which of course is not the best, but it's better than what it was.
Right, right. Well, we're aware of it at least. And hopefully no one let their plants and things go into the winter without watering them, because it was very, very dry. And things like, you know, the hydrangea, which should be making new growth now, and we should be seeing flower buds and that, mine is as dormant as can be. So I don't know.
Well, that's one of the last things. I've got a little hydrangea, and that's one of the last thing that comes up.
For you?
Yeah. But my bigger ones with the shrubby, more bigger shrubby,
yeah,
ones,
right,
I just pruned them about a week or two ago because they hadn't budded out yet. So.
Yeah. That's the thing about those larger hydrangeas. You know, when they're small, you buy them at the store, they're just right. And then you're so tickled that they start making this new growth. And the first thing you know, you got this great big thing that you didn't want at all. And you love the shape, but you don't have the size for it. And you have to start very carefully. Now, Karen, you will have to be careful if you have hydrangeas, because I know when you get out there with your pruners, you are such a farmer at heart. You want to do a good job.
Well, I do. And, you know, we've got, that's the thing, when you see when you go to buy something at a nursery or whatever, and it says it gets to be 6 to 8 feet, but you say, well, no way, it's only like 18 inches.
Not in my yard.
Right, right. And then wait. I mean, you know, the first year it sleeps, the next year it it creeps, and the next year it leaps. So yes. By year three, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what happened here?
Yeah.
And so you really do need to believe when it says it's going to get this big, it probably will.
And you know, the thing is, a lot of times people just want to just mow it down on top.
Yeah, just...
You have to start thinning out the branches that are coming up from the base, too, because not only will it get tall, it'll also spread, and then you don't have room for it where it's at.
Right. We got a text from one of our listeners, and I don't know if I have a good answer for this, but it says, for master gardeners, how do you keep cats out of a garden? Well, I keep mine in the house.
Yeah.
Which is probably the best thing. The other thing is I do use that deer defeat stuff, which I spray. It keeps out bunnies and deer. I know there are some people who, depends on how big, if you got a big yard, it's really tough, but they have some, like, I don't recommend it, but it's plastic stuff that's got pokey stuff and they don't like to walk on it, so mm-hmm. you need to put it there. It's...
You know what, Karen?
Yeah.
In all the years that I've lived in my house, we never had cats that came visiting.
You didn't? Okay.
No.
Well, now, I don't really in my neighborhood either, because
I think
people keep them inside.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you have a coffee party in your neighborhood, that's when you really get the inside story.
Sure.
And so we had a new neighbor, and I guess they've been there a couple years now, and they were talking about they've been feeding cats, and they come up from the ravine.
Okay.
And someone said to them, you better stop doing that, because then they'll just keep coming back, and they'll be coming to the other houses too. And some of these feral cats like that, that if you've got bird feeders in your yards, they can get up in there, and they can start killing your beautiful songbirds and things. So I would be careful about anybody that let their cats run loose.
Yeah, you know, that really is the best advice I have, is to not let your cats out. And but I realized when we were in the country, we had on the farm 30, 40 cats, and their job was they were mousers and things like that. But, they didn't really bother anything because in the garden, because there was so much space. So
there was so much to eat.
Well, yeah.
You know, they on would, the farm. Yeah.
So that's a really tough thing to say, because, I mean, and they can jump. It's not like you can build a fence there.
Sure.
Jump higher than bunnies, and
right.
And so,
you know, when we
please
were
don't
little,
kill them though.
No, we had a mother cat, and wouldn't you know it, she would always have at least six babies, and I said to my mother, you know, it's so smart that she has one for each of us. We're six kids, and now we each get a new kitten. And my mother would say, nope. We've got one cat and that's it. We have to find a home for them. And so we always had farm friends that would take cats. And then finally, I think she didn't get pregnant anymore. I wonder if there's only a certain age that cats...
Oh, no. No, they can. But sometimes they get like a uterine infection or something, because that's what happened to my cat, and I had to have it taken to the vet. But and the best thing is to spay or neuter your cats.
Yeah, right.
Including feral ones. You know, that's... I know there are some communities that actually have programs where you can take them and they'll have a spay and neuter program, and then they'll put like a notch in their ear to let you know if you see that notch that they are a feral cat, they've been spayed or neutered, so it's just a little...
I think that's great. And if you have a cat that comes to your home, and you know, in our neighborhood, people don't let animals run loose. I don't think they do in most neighborhoods.
Or you're not supposed to. But.
No. And so if you'd have one coming up, it probably is homeless.
Or escaped by accident.
Yeah. We were at a coffee party and we were talking about this. And my one neighbor was saying, well, she was new to the neighborhood and she had a cat that was visiting and it was in her yard and it came up from the ravine and she was afraid it was homeless. And so she tried to feed it. And she could toss food out into the yard and the cat would eat it. But when she tried to make a trail up to her porch and get the cat in, it wouldn't even come close.
It was too smart.
It absolutely did not want to get going to that house.
It was a smart cat.
It was a smart cat. And apparently it moved on.
So I don't know that we have a really good answer for that question.
I forgot the question.
Well, how to keep cats out of your yard.
How to keep them out of your yard.
That's really dumb.
I don't know that you can.
Don't put poison out either, because that's what's horrible.
Sometimes they just need water. And, you know, I have a water dishes that, in the front that are down on the ground.
You water the raccoons, too? And the opossums.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, I have a fence around it.
Yeah.
And so it's only, raccoons or opossums could climb that fence. But I guess for a drink of water, it's not worth it going over the fence. And that garden is lit at night, so there's lights there. And maybe they don't like being in the spotlight. They like to be in the dark.
Well, one of the things with, speaking of raccoons, you know, when we used to have that pond and other neighbors had ponds, the raccoons would come and eat the fish.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a big blue heron that came one time and took the fish, one of my big fish out of the koi's out of the pond, and boy, that was disgusting. But there's wildlife.
And you gave us one of your big fish.
I did.
And
Bucket, you called it.
Yeah, Bucket. And you said, I'm going to give you this one. This is the last one before I kill it. And I said, okay, bring it home. I'll bring it home. And wouldn't you know, we had it. It was fished out of the pond, but she'd already had babies.
You killed it.
Yeah. Well, however.
So you think a raccoon did it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah.
But the babies all survived. And it was so neat because we still have, from that original fish, we still have two white-colored I don't know if they're goldfish or what they were, Karen. We got them from you.
They would be koi.
Are they koi? Yeah.
If they were white, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I had koi. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The two white ones, and they're just as happy as can be. And, of course, they all come in the wintertime, and they go back out in the spring. And we're always happy to see them back out there. And when the neighbor kids come, they like to stand by the edge of the pond and watch for the fish. And then, of course, we have to give them food that they can toss in. And that really makes them happy. You know, kids and fish ponds, these little koi ponds, I think that's a really good match. If you can't have a cat or a dog, a fish can become your friend, too.
But let me tell you, from having a pond, ponds can be a lot of work and a lot of expense. I know you have a smaller one that Dave made. We had a 1,000-gallon one that was built in the
hillside,
and it also had a 5-foot-high waterfall. And for a long time, probably 8 years, it was great. And then all of a sudden, they got to leak, and then it was cost more and more every year. So before you go down that route, make sure you've got the ability to maintain and afford it.
And you know, the thing with water is it's a very calming thing.
Oh, it brings the birds like you wouldn't believe,
right,
too.
And ours sits right adjacent to our screened-in porch.
Sure.
You can sit out there and you'll listen to the water falling, you know, it's recirculating all the time. And I have water lilies that we plant in there. We take them in every year. Water lilies are easy to care for. People think they aren't. They can't in an artificial pond. They won't survive. The roots will freeze. The whole water business freezes.
Yeah.
And so bring them in a plastic bucket, you know, a 5-gallon bucket. Put it in a cool place, and they'll survive just nicely. In the spring when it starts warming up and staying warm, then you can put them back out again. And they just grow. They get blooms on them. It's really a nice thing. A pond and water is nice, but you don't have to get big. You can have something that's small and still enjoy it.
Right. Or you can just get a house on a lake.
Yeah.
That's the other.
And never enjoy it because you're always working.
So I just wanted to mention about seeds. I know people talk about seed planting, and you know, we're past mid-March now, so you know, you might, this is a time, you know, if you want to put seeds in, like your eggplant, if you do okra and peppers, good time. So now in early April, which we're 5 to 6 weeks out from the frost date, some of the other things you might want to start now early April are your tomatoes, because you know, we said don't
start them from seed.
Seed, of course. And you know, some of your other flowers, if you want to get started too. And this is from the University of Minnesota site, by the way. If you go to U of M under seed starting, you may start things like your marigolds, your French marigolds, nasturtiums, Let's see.
I've got other kohlrabi, arugula, peas, all of these things right now.
Well, I have then in mid-April, so we're not there yet. Mid-April is when it says your sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
I have sweet potatoes for mid, and then also for mid-April, your cosmos, your sweet peas, your thunbergia, which are those, the viney, I can't remember. Thunbergia, I can't remember it now, but zinnias as well later. But I try to do things like zinnias in the ground or marigolds because they are so easy to grow in the ground.
They are.
And sometimes they don't take well to transplanting. It's bigger, more harm to them, or they just, it's such a stress. So there you go.
That's true, too. And, you know, it depends on, with transplanting, if you buy a plant from a nursery, you really have to gradually introduce it to the outdoors.
Harden it off.
Yes, hardening it off. And that really means just very slowly, you know, an hour at a time or less than an hour
outside.
At a time.
Mm-hmm.
And not in the bright sunlight because you'll burn it up. So
maybe the north side of your house is which
yeah,
was what I do.
Or you got a screened-in porch or something like that. Yeah. You know, I have just checked, and the soil temperature right now in our area is 32 degrees. So
very cold. Yet
it is very, very cold. Things like 60 degrees. It depends on, of course, what it is that you're putting in. But yeah, beans, cucumbers, those things. The longer you wait, the better off you're going
to
be.
Well, things like beans, they want it to be at least 60 degrees if you're going to put those. So
yeah.
I wait till usually the last of May or beginning
squash,
of June.
And squash, yeah, right. Watermelon, very, very late. I remember when I was a kid and we'd be planting the garden and I'd say, oh, plant the watermelon next. And my mother would say, oh, no, it's much too early. And I'd say, well, we'll get a jump on it. And she'd say, no, you won't have anything. So I would have to wait, and when we could finally get the watermelon planted, I was so happy because I knew it may take 3 months, but eventually we would have watermelon.
You know, I like that they have the smaller mini watermelons now because some of those big ones just take too long in terms of maturing. So you can get those, what they call personal watermelons, and they're just as good, but you can do them in your own garden.
Yeah, and you know those sugar baby or sugar, you
love
know.
Lover, yeah.
Yeah, I've grown those. They're really, really excellent. You can grow them in a pot, in a container on your deck or on your patio. All that's required is that you keep them watered.
You know, there are so many varieties now that you can grow in containers because, you know, so many people want to garden.
Yes.
Whether you have a little balcony or something, you have to have sunlight, though, of course.
Yes.
But some of them are, you know, even your peas, there's patio peas where you can grow them in a little pot and get a whole bunch. There's a lot of other varieties of things. Just look for the ones that say, you know, don't get larger than or good for containers.
Yes. I was going to say, I made a note. When you're checking the soil temperature, you have to check. You have to go down, you know, 6, 7, 8
inches.
Feet.
That's inches. The, inches.
Yeah,
you said feet.
Inches, yeah. That's where the roots are at.
Right.
So don't just go out and then just check the first 1 or 2 inches because you're going to be planting much deeper than that. Yeah.
Well,
just wait.
We should remind people that next Saturday, not this Saturday, next Saturday.
April 6th.
Is going to be Spring Alive.
Yes, that's our big event when we have all these great speakers that come. Guess what, Karen? For all this wonderful information, it's free. They don't charge for it.
And let me get the information here. I am one of the presenters, actually, Barb, and my son, Grant. So this is next Saturday. And we'll probably talk about it next week, too. But next Saturday, put it on your calendar. It starts at 9 o'clock, and it is at the Pioneer Bank. And if you know where that is, where's the address here?
It's on the main drag.
Oh, here it is. It's 1450 Adams Street is the address.
Adams.
But starting at 9 to 9:30, it's registration. It's free. 9:30 to 10:30 is a talk by Brandon Miller. He is an assistant professor of horticulture at the University of Minnesota. He will be talking about underutilized woody plants for use in the managed landscape. Then 10:30 to 11:30, is going to be Johanna George, who used to be at Drummers, but now she is a landscape designer and horticulturist for Bailey Nursery, and she will be talking about the new annuals and perennial flowers for 2024, and that's always fascinating. And then, ta-da, 11:30 to 12:30 is The Lovely Lily by Karen Wright and her son Grant Pribble, who hybridizes them, and we'll be talking about that. And then 12:30 to 1:30, our favorite humorist and bird guy, Al Batt, will be talking about the effect of climate change on birds and other wildlife. And so it will be a nice morning.
And free.
And it's free, yeah.
Yes, all that good information. Be sure and bring a big tablet, a notebook, so you think you're going to remember all that stuff. You're not going to. So
I think there's door prizes and stuff, which is always good, too. And you can register. While it's free, you can register so they have an idea, you know, just for fun. But go online at, you can just type in Minnesota River Valley Master Gardeners, and then you can...
Right, you call the extension office.
Yeah, call the extension office, yeah. Right. Okay, well, hopefully you are able to... Will you be there?
Yes, of course.
Well, I'll be there presenting, so I have to be there.
Yeah, I wanted to go. We have another meeting up in garden, the lilies.
Oh, yes, the lily bulb sale.
Yeah, it's the lily sale, and I would like to be there also, but I can't be both places, so I think... I'm going to stay for our program. There's so many great speakers.
I'm sending my sister because she's on the board now of the Lily Society.
Yeah, and give her a list.
Well, yeah. So the Lily Bulb Sale is on April 6th also, and that starts at 9 in the morning for members, so you get an early start if you're a member, and it's $10 for 2 years. I mean, you can't get any better than that for this one in terms of a membership, so you might as well. Otherwise, for the public, it is from 10 o'clock until bulbs are sold out. Come early for best selection. It is at the Bachman's on Lindale, which is where they always hold it. You can check more at the North Star Lily Society online.
Yep, right. It's a great sale.
Okay. Thanks, Barb.
Well, Karen, have a nice Easter.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.